You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning at 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
Our build-up to UFC 229, Conor McGregor against Khabib Nurmagomedov, continues. And I'm delighted to say that Chuck Mindenhall of MMA Fighting and TheRinger.com joins us on the line. Good morning to you, Chuck. How are things?
Great, man. I'm actually getting set to head to Vegas right after this. So good timing, fellas.
Yeah, absolutely. It is this sort of, I'd say today is probably for people in your position, quite a big transit day because everybody's flying over to make sure they're there for Thursday night for that press conference, the second press conference in the build up to this fight. I guess we'll start with a fairly general question from the public utterances that you've heard from Conor McGregor and Khabib over the last fortnight or so. What's the main takeaway that you've taken about the two guys?
Well, I think the big takeaway is that there's genuine bad blood between these guys. I think we saw that in that initial press conference where you see Conor McGregor just really, really thrumming on every nerve, anything he can get a mental advantage in this fight. He was already playing it. That was really interesting to see. I didn't know if he would show up in a more subdued form, given the whole Dolly incident with the bus in Brooklyn back in April. And rather than that, I always love the fact that he shows up and he's a little bit, you know, he wants to ratchet things up even more. And here we are. He was already kind of playing that that role a little bit. And heading into fight week, you know, just the brief times we've heard him in the media a little bit talking, I feel like it's genuine bad blood. And it's interesting to see Conor McGregor from an emotional standpoint maybe being more involved than he normally would be in a fight like this.
Chuck, just on saying the fight and that first press conference performance, I saw in the PC Day for MMA Fighting straight away after your reaction, you said that you saw some comparisons between him and Ali in terms of selling a fight. Well, maybe talk us through what you were thinking there and where you see the comparisons between the two and if you think that it is, you know, a fair comparison to make at this stage.
I do. You know, it's funny because I was one of the guys who might have been critical of that kind of comparison earlier in his career because we're just so quick to latch on to guys, new guys coming up and want to assign them a kind of greatness comparison. You know, we want to put them in context with other big fight promoters of the day. But it really comes down to, you know, when the scrutiny gets big and the pressures are there and the doubts surmount, I feel like he steps up his game, and there's something about that mentality was really what Muhammad Ali was all about. Obviously, Muhammad Ali was coming from a whole different climate, and there was, there was a lot of turmoil in the world when he was when going through it with the war and everything else. But in this instance, I just feel like each time there is added scrutiny, added pressure, added magnitude, we see Conor McGregor show up in rarer and rarer form, not just meeting an expectation, because that's very difficult to do where he's put himself, but actually exceeding those expectations, both in the fight, you know, in the lead up to the fight and usually come fight night. So in my mind, he is definitely doing that. I think he's tailor-made for promotion and tailor-made for that kind of greatness.
When you say you were critical early doors of this comparison, what do you mean by that? What were the certain things that you were critical of?
Well, I mean, you know, from the earliest things, going back to the Juvenile fights when he was, you know, fighting over in Ireland and England, I felt like before he even got in the UFC, there was a lot of hype placed on Conor McGregor. By the time he was taking out Brimage and Max Holloway in Boston, and they're dropping the lights on him during prelims and everything else, I felt like we were hearing comparisons to people like Muhammad Ali, like that he could be the Irish Muhammad Ali or things like that. I felt like in America, at least, that kind of hyperbole, or so it seemed at the time, was fairly prevalent. And by the time he fought in Dublin against Brandao, it started to turn for me a little bit. But as he's handled the stage, the one-punch knockout of Aldo, and then the way he handled himself at MSG, these are the types of things when the stage gets that big and he's able to perform, not just back up. It's not that he's saying it, it's that he's backing up everything he says. And I think that once I saw those things happen and throughout the Mayweather stuff, I kind of changed my tune. But initially, I thought that those types of comparisons were not just irresponsible, but, you know, just a little bit irresponsible and too premature, I would say. Yeah. So I was critical of people using that comparison.
And just in terms of, you know, kind of that one man show we saw him put on there in New York without any crowd to bounce off, even 2 or 3 weeks ago, did you think kind of he was capable of that type of performance and kind of going to that just maxed out kind of X level McGregor that he seemed to summon?
I mean, I'm not surprised by anything he does anymore, but that was a tough situation. That room was just this big vacuous void. There wasn't any sound. It was just being swallowed. The microphone's just swallowed by this cathedral silence behind it. And he was still able to basically fill that room with energy, which to me, I mean, these are the types of feats. Maybe there's only one guy who can do that, and that's Conor McGregor. So to me, he's I wouldn't say I'm surprised at this point, but you're always interested in what form he's going to show up and how he's going to manipulate the fight to his advantage.
Do you think that the presence of a crowd now on Thursday is going to change the dynamic significantly? And what do you expect from Thursday night in Vegas?
Oh, man, it's going to be fun because, you know how it is. Like the Irish always show up, obviously, in Las Vegas or New York or wherever he's fighting. But I've been those last couple fights in Vegas and they're always just it's pandemonium, man. And when they especially given the context of what's happened through this fight buildup, I think by Thursday, too, it's going to feel like it's filling in the bigness of what it's supposed to be. And I think he's going to feed off that energy 100%, man. It's been a couple of years and he's the kind of guy, I think, who, you know, he's a mastermind in terms of big picture setup, but he needs his fans. I think he feeds off of that energy from his fans. He likes to know that his country's behind him. And as you guys well know, I think he's at his very best when he's able to do that. So that's the highlight of the week, honestly, is what happens on Thursday until we get to the fight night. But that's the one reason to be in Vegas if for the public or anybody else, the media, that's the one big reason to be out there is just to see what happens there.
Yeah, it does seem that he's sort of trickling into this sort of classic McGregor siege mentality over the last couple of days. And I don't mean that in a negative way whatsoever. I think, as you say, he's at his best when he's got a cause, when it feels like it's himself and his fans against the world. And the sort of fury that exists within Conor McGregor that we've seen previously, a lot of people were saying was absent from that first press conference, that it was just kind of a darker bubbling under. But I think that's starting to bubble to the surface a little bit more. And he's starting to actually articulate the notion that he doesn't care what anybody thinks about him. And I can pretty much guarantee anybody that when it comes to Thursday night, we're going to see not a darker Conor McGregor as it's been described previously, but whatever that darkness is, it's going to be on the surface. We're going to have a little less guesswork to do when we try to suss out what Conor McGregor is trying to say.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And it's funny because a lot of times I think, especially in this kind, because we're always in unprecedented territory, like because it gets bigger and bigger each time he fights. But I think he, a lot of times, is psyching himself up. He's finding his own rhythm even before the fight. He's kind of figuring out how to burrow into a Nurmagomedov's psyche and how to start to win that mental game beforehand. And I thought we were seeing like the first part of that in that initial press conference. And I think we'll see that ratcheted up to 11 by the time we get to Thursday. So it should be a lot of fun, man. It's also fun just to point out, like, the stoicism, obviously, is the perfect foil to have Nurmagomedov, who's, like, stone-faced and very reticent fellow who's, you know, he just seems completely nonplussed by all of this. So that dynamic of putting those two together in a raucous crowd, I think that's going to be a lot of fun to see.
And Chuck, just given the kind of media appearance we've seen from McGregor in the last few days, one of the comments stood out to me was him telling the McLife that, you know, he momentarily fell out of love with the fight game. Does he strike you as a guy who has a lot of time left in the UFC, who's going to be around much longer?
That's a great question. Sometimes, see, the mentality of a lot of fighters, especially when they're on top, is that they could leave at any time. Anderson Silva was threatening to leave the game during his run of greatness, multiple times. We'd hear the retirement, how many we got left. I feel like guys who are on top of the game have a much looser sense of how long they want to stay in because they're still dictating their own terms. I think that everything is still dancing to their tune at that point. Now, what happens if he loses? That's the question. Does he then want to keep going to regain the thing that he lost? And I feel like that's Conor McGregor strikes me as the guy who might go through that kind of transition. If he starts to lose some of that luster, I don't think the money is going to dictate everything for him. I think that he craves that kind of attention. You have to crave that kind of attention to uphold your responsibilities to the point he does and to flourish in that kind of scrutiny. So I think that if he loses, we could end up seeing him, for years to come. If he wins, I still think we'll see him probably in big fights, like the type of big fights that may not make sense to titles and things like that. They'll just be big fights that make sense to Conor McGregor at that point. But the loss is really where I'm like, once you see a guy lose, I think is when you start to see how long they really want to go.
Well, that's very true. And I think when he says this week that it's not about the money for him anymore, like a lot of people aren't buying that. There's a big part of me that does buy that. And there is a big part of me that Conor McGregor, when he listens to conversations, like the idea that you mentioned, that you started to think that he is resembling Muhammad Ali in certain ways of his character, that sort of stuff really does matter to Conor McGregor, that there is a legacy of Conor McGregor. And if we just revisit the Ali comparison for just one moment, what did Muhammad Ali have in his career? Well, he had fantastic rivalries. And I mean, a Khabib rematch, given how, if this fight is a classic, say, on Saturday, would be something that would create a rivalry straight away. We already have a great modern rivalry with Nate Diaz. A trilogy there would turn that into a classic modern rivalry, and suddenly you start to tick another one of the Muhammad Ali boxes.
Yes, 100%, man. I agree with you 100%, and we always look at the golden age of our heavyweights in boxing in the 70s, and man, you're absolutely right. The way it was constructed, there were, you know, multiple good, very capable, very strong and dangerous people all at the top. Well, that's kind of the setup we're dealing in, especially for a guy like McGregor who can fight in multiple weight classes and actually has the clout to lobby for and possibly develop for himself the 165-pound weight class when it's all said and done. I think that all of that combined, man, he is set up to do whatever he wants. But he's already, I think that Diaz fight sits out there glaring, you know, to be taken up and to finish out. So that trilogy will happen at some point. And obviously, this Nurmagomedov, just depending on how it goes, though, if Nurmagomedov goes out there and gets smoked in the first round, kind of like Jose Aldo did, that's not a rivalry anymore. I think he puts the Nurmagomedov thing behind him. But if the fight is really contested, and especially if he loses a close fight or it's a back and forth war or something like that, you're absolutely right, man. I think that Nurmagomedov fits that bill 100% to give him an ongoing rivalry throughout the rest of his career.
That's interesting, Chuck. Just on the comparison with, say, the golden era of heavyweight boxing, but there's also the issue here that kind of McGregor's a linchpin and all that. If he steps away now, is the McGregor-shaped hole in the UFC bigger than ever? Are they more reliant than ever on McGregor?
That's a good question, man. This week is very telling. I know the very first piece I worked on for The Ringer is really about, like, what this means. You know, what does this fight mean? How pivotal is it for the UFC? It's very difficult to forecast. But I do know one thing. I mean, $2.5 million, if that's really the projected total, you have to think, like, if you added up all the pay-per-views of 2018, it falls short of $2.5 million. It's like one event makes up for a mediocre slate for, you know, 9-10 months or whatever it is. To me, that's the kind of thing that is just very different. We're not used to it. We're not used to trying to figure out what a guy of that magnitude means. A guy who literally is admired and resented at the same time by everybody on the roster because he's able to accomplish what he does. His greatness is complicated. It's been a weird place you're in. Nurmagomedov winning would be business possibly for the UFC in terms of a rematch. I'm not sure where it puts Nurmagomedov in terms of star. Like, I think his name will be out there, but at the same time, does he become public enemy number one for knocking off an icon? You know, it's like there are so many weird factors to this fight. It really just comes down to how it plays out. I just feel like history will be shuffling with each exchange in there. But ultimately, man, it feels like the UFC is finally kind of getting back on pace. Maybe I'm duping myself to believe that, but having McGregor back, this is the biggest fight in the UFC's history. And, you know, having Jon Jones and Brock Lesnar and a couple of the other big draws on deck and getting ready to fight, I feel like it's finally to a place where there's a chance for a little bit of a resurrection, a little bit of a build back up.
And just kind of on that team joke, one of the things that we've been reading is the pieces you've written for The Ringer about the UFC's CM Punk experiment, bringing over WWE superstar, trying to cash in there. You wrote that ultimately that experiment backfired. Do you think that the UFC will have the same view as you on that? And if they are kind of, you know, missing their McGregor, missing the man who's going to come and fill the coffers, could you see them going for something like that again?
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you, the UFC never agrees with me on any of this stuff, so that's an easy one. But I mean, ultimately, you're protecting the sanctity of the octagon by saying that the best people in the world are actually in there competing to find out who the best fighter in the world is, right? Like, it's all aimed toward that goal. The CM Punk thing was not about that, and I think that that is where that experiment failed, because the bottom line was he was never going to be anything. We were watching him in a whole different set of circumstances, which was literally, hey, let's see if this guy can achieve a bucket list thing after training for a couple years with Duke Rufus and all this. How far can he go? And it turns out he just looked bad in there, and I think that's a bad look for the UFC. I do believe, though, having said all of that, that we may trend in that direction, especially with more people. You know, you hear the Logan Paul stuff or whoever, like people want to do this. You can't deny that any set, especially when you see the pay-per-views are coming in below 200,000, 150,000, 130,000. And you think, what are they going to do? This is a business first, right? Like you have to figure out how to make people pay attention. And you have now an ownership group that's based on entertainment. I think that all those things combined, I don't think we'll see the last of a meritless fighter making his way into the UFC just to draw eyes. Let's put it that way.
Well, that's the thing. Once they got a bite of the Conor McGregor cherry and the figures that comes with that, they're not going to let that go too soon. Just one tangent we want to take with you, Chuck, before we wrap up this morning. The idea of bare-knuckle fighting, I'd say forget the UFC for a moment and let's talk about the BKFC, because you went to Wyoming in June. You wrote a great piece for TheRinger.com. We'll throw up a link on our Twitter. You were there at the first event of the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, as I say, in Wyoming. Talk to us about it. What the hell is this?
Well, I wasn't actually there. I watched. Right. I just pay-per-view. Yeah, but you know, I was in close contact with all the guys who were there, and I was really interested in it. Obviously, something that's there's so many weird factors of something like this, because you know, it's like with MMA, you always figure out why you're psychologically drawn to it, right? And so we go through these. Sometimes it's uncomfortable. You're like, well, what am I? What do I like about this? And you have to kind of answer questions about that. And it's a guilty pleasure in some ways, however, whatever you want to find. But like the bare knuckle thing is the stripped down version of it that's a little bit cruder, a little bit ratcheted towards something more barbaric, you know. And all of that was. It's very intriguing in a PC world like this. So all of a sudden we're dealing with guys taking off the gloves, and not to protect face. You know, the reason they wear gloves is not to protect the face as so much as the knuckles. And it's one of those type of things that I was intrigued as to how this would look. If you're talking about the very first one, did you guys watch it? Cause to me, it felt very kind of refreshing to see the kind of joy these fighters took and the fact that they could fight like that. It was like they've been held back by MMA and all the broad, you know, takedowns and kicks and everything. So suddenly, if you're in a box match with bare knuckle, I felt like these guys were just in seventh heaven. You know what I mean? To be able to fight that way. And there was a couple of people who I think were tailor-made to fight that way. So I think the verdict's still out on it. Obviously, the last fight card, it seemed like it kind of lost some of its steam already. And I'm not sure if having bigger names involved might help it, or if it's just going to take some time to get rolling. But I do think that there's a place for it. That's my initial gut feeling. I think there's a place for it, and it's great for these fighters who maybe didn't pan out in the UFC or, you know, in boxing, whatever. They have a place to go where they can resurrect themselves. I always like that narrative as well.
Is it legal all over the United States? And, like, is there a stringent set of rules that they have to abide by?
Well, it's not legal yet everywhere. So the Wyoming and I think Biloxi, Mississippi, those are the two places that have held it. And I believe they're going back to both of those places. There's two different organizations going back to those two places. Talking to the organizer and the promoter at the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship, the first one that ran, he said that, you know, a lot of states were waiting to find out how the first one looked. So they needed the pioneer to be something like Wyoming, where they went in there and showed what it would look like, and it wasn't as crazy and as dangerous as everybody might think and all this. And then Mississippi came aboard. According to him, there were multiple states lining up after that, and that they would be hitting multiple states in this coming year. So right now, no, it is not. It is not. It is not legal in every state, but it sounds like they're working on that. They're kind of like where the UFC was back in like 2000. You know, they're in the process.
Yeah, and like you make this comparison in the article as well, that it is very reminiscent of the good old days of the UFC, the Wild West nature of it all, I think is the term you use. And for sure, there is an appeal to that. There is a market out there for the way the UFC used to be, rather than this quite corporate, quite polished version of what it is now. I mean, we had Hoyce Gracie in this very studio a few months ago, and some of the stories he tells are amazing. I mean, going up against sumo wrestlers in the first ever UFC, these are brilliant stories. And of course, as you say, there is a huge audience for that. It's not exactly the thing that maybe those people want, but there is something there. There is an appeal, like there was an appeal for the very first few UFCs.
Yeah, I mean, there's still like this guerrilla, like renegade feel to it, right? Like you put these two guys in there and it feels like you're checking kind of your inhibitions at the door to watch something like that. And I that vibe, that kind of more underground vibe, or that, like, it, that's what fed the original niche, right? Like, it was like the essence that went into it, that it was outside of the PC world, that, you know, the original UFC was, it operated and flourished really, on taboos. And I feel like that's what the bare knuckle thing is going in for. So the bare knuckle thing is like happily going in for the taboos, whereas the UFC at some point had to start distancing themselves from it. And I think that people, so that's where the divide starts. A lot of people can look back on the original set, on the original idea there, and be like, hey, we're home. You know, this is what we liked originally. It was just that, it wasn't PC and it wasn't polished. It wasn't corporate. And, it's kind of like the reinvention of that old thing, you know, that old idea.
And Chuck, going into their kind of third and fourth events, which are slated, is there kind of a buzz building around that federation, or is there kind of initial curiosity that's kind of starting to die off?
What was your? I'm sorry, you're asking about the bare knuckle in terms of
just in whether we obviously had this initial coverage of it and kind of the morbid fascination. Then when you get onto events 2, 3, 4, does it seem to be finding a niche that's got a bit of momentum behind it, or does it seem to be kind of maybe?
It seems like it's already fizzling, but I do feel like that I think that the verdict's still out. I think you're right. We're gonna have to see like 3, 4, and 5 and just see what happens. You have to see what kind of names they bring in, and see if the fights themselves really pan out. Cause I thought the second set of fights, you saw a lot more technical, and as crazy as it sounds, it's counterintuitive. It almost took away from the effect. I think people want to see people going in there with this why not attitude of just throwing bombs and trying to knock each other out. So I think that it's still in the process of identifying itself. And I know one thing, the second event in terms of traffic, if you're talking about just traffic for web, like hits and things like that, was way, way down from the first one. So that's not a good sign. But I feel like you have to give them a fair shake to, you know, time to see where they end up, maybe first quarter of 2019. But it could be a flash in the pan, man. I mean, let's face it, if they can't get the thing rolling, it won't be able to survive. They won't be able to pump that kind of money into it.
Yeah, someone be keeping an eye on. Just before we let you go, you mentioned that sort of every time McGregor comes around, we're not sure what iteration, what persona we're going to see. Of the kind of McGregors we've seen, and specifically the McGregor fights, looking back, do you have a favourite McGregor fight for any and kind of any specific reason why one really stood out to you?
You know, it's funny because what was the one? Was it Jose Aldo when he showed up with Ido Portal in the pool noodles and all that? And I remember thinking at the time, I was thinking maybe he jumped the shark a little bit. And that maybe he was already, you know, like Tom Brady in the NFL and football over here has like a health guru guy. And there's all kinds of headlines about this. And you start to think like, okay, now we're in like the new age Tom Brady. It was almost like that moment, but it clearly wasn't. Everything he's done so far has been purposeful. And I think that that's like a tribute to him and how serious he really is. His actions speak louder than his words in most cases. That particular lead up was very, very interesting. But man, I got to go back to the first Nate Diaz fight because I thought that, you know how it is with him. Like, I think he really feasts on people's doubts. And it was one of those situations, he's supposed to be fighting Dos Anjos, and Dos Anjos gets hurt, and then it becomes Nate Diaz. There's this huge, compelling moment where it's like, whoa, we never thought we'd see these two guys fight each other. And the way McGregor sort of handled it, and he was already so full of material, like just like he'd been waiting for this fight to happen, which was crazy. But just the way he showed up prepared and with the one-liners at that impromptu press conference. And to me, that was vintage. It just shows you how deep that guy is, man. It was vintage McGregor. So I think that so far that is still my favorite, just given the circumstances.
Yeah, it's interesting you make the Tom Brady comparison, you know, TB12, proper 12, all the stars are aligning here between these two superstars. Chuck Mindenhall, thank you so much for your time. It's been great to chat to you. Enjoy Thursday night, but most importantly, enjoy Saturday night.
All right. Thank you, fellas. Appreciate it.
So if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 a.m.